The following presentation was recorded at the 2001 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Out of your experience, know who you are. This morning, I have learned to identify in myself that a way that I operate is there are so many things to see, so many things to appreciate, so many things to enjoy in life, and it's just not right to keep them all to myself. When I see something, somebody else has to know it too. And again, this morning, as I took my morning walk and was down east here, and the sun was coming up behind a tree, its full power is behind the tree, and there's a bit of mist in the air, and the beams came out through the tree, and it was a glorious sight that words cannot express. And I stood there and looked at that, and I thought, just think of all the people that are not seeing this. And I almost felt myself turning, isn't there somebody here whose attention I can call to look at that? Look at that! Awesome sight. And I thought of the millions of people who did not see what I saw this morning. That's, in essence, a big part of teaching. There are things that you see, things that you have experienced. Other people just must also see as you've seen and experience what you have experienced. My heart yearns as I think of us going out into our classrooms, and I encourage you to appeal to the energy that's in the child. Don't have the mentality that this is all your work and they're there to receive. When it comes to making bulletin boards or whatever the project is, engage the children. There's a tremendous amount of energy there. And you tap into that energy. I remember a little expression I heard about 20 years ago that stuck with me. A speaker talked about somehow reaching in to the child's heart and touching the child's heart strings. And having the child do his work by his own will. Now you chew over that one for a while. Comment was made this morning about it being overwhelmed. I know exactly what you're talking about. But if you eat in a buffet or a smorgasbord, when you walk into the buffet line, when you walk down here to the cafeteria line at lunch and see all that food, why aren't you overwhelmed? Well, you really, if I were responsible to eat all that food myself, that would be discouraging to me. I would be overwhelmed with all that food and in a smorgasbord with the variety. But I don't need to eat it all. And since I don't need to eat it all, that I can enjoy it. I can take some and I can enjoy it. And so the only reason we would ever feel overwhelmed as we approach the task of teaching is if we think we have to do everything. They have to learn everything. You can't do everything and they can't learn everything, but learn something and learn something well and enjoy what you do. Just a few thoughts I thought I should share as we start here today. Another three-liner I love. This comes from Charlotte Mason, I believe. She said, every day, a child needs something to care about. Something to care about. Think of that, whether it's in a given class or at least in the school day. There needs to be something today that's discussed, brought before the children, some experience, something that they can care about. If there's nothing to care about in the day, there's really no interest. Secondly, something to think about. Some idea, something to engage the mind. Ideas are big. People can run all day on an idea. But without an idea, without engaging the mind, there's really... And then third, something to do. Think about that as the school day is before you. Why should my students care? What is there for them to care about? Secondly, is there going to be something here today in one of these subjects, at least ideally in everyone, but at least one of them, for them to think about, something to really grip the imagination of the mind? And third, something to do. Doing doesn't necessarily mean a project. It might be pencil and paperwork, but people have to have something to do, not just sit there and listen all the time. And one other comment I'd like to, on this list, it's now a list of 14, but don't forget the lists. In fact, what I did was gave you a list. But lists are a very simple writing tool, and use your imagination. There are all kinds of lists you can make. Look through this story and find the 10 most powerful verbs you can find, or what other adjectives. What are the results in this history lesson? What are the results? Or find some details. Find some details. Think of all different kinds. Lists are easy to make, but they can be very creative. There are all kinds of lists. What I want to do today is say a few things about the bottom of the paper that I gave you on the first day, and that is speaking across the curriculum. Now, speaking is actually between the reading and the writing. That is, you read and take it in, and when you write, you put some things down definitely on paper. Speaking is a little more tentative. You can think out loud. Think out loud. And so we have actually gotten to the point, there's been somewhat of a reaction to all the rote recitation type teaching, and we've almost gotten to the point that we've gone to the other extreme and gone to quiet all day with pencil and paper and nobody saying anything. And so then in quote, real life outside of school, you have to speak. When you meet people, you don't take a piece of paper and write down something, hand it to them, and then he writes and hands it back to you. You speak. And you ought to be able to talk about what you're thinking about. And so ask yourself, how much do my students actually speak in class or in devotions or in our extra little classes that we have? And so whether it's simply presenting something, we've been talking about writing things, making lists, writing a sentence, writing a few words. Have them read them like I had you read some. Now, we didn't have time for all of them, but have them read them. And read aloud selected passages. Tell a student on ahead, I want you to read aloud that paragraph. Some things are best shared as a group experience. When you read something aloud well, we actually experience something together that we do not otherwise experience. And reciting. In the sense, it's almost a lost sense in many of our schools, and that is the sense of being able to tell what we have learned. Yes, we want to learn concepts, but you can't have concepts without information. So you ought to be able to enumerate, what are some states, what are some, instead of just writing the list, you could list it. What are some causes? What are some nouns? List some nouns. All right. Another one, and the fourth one is a very significant one. You can circle that and underline and highlight it. Narrate. That refers to after you've read a lesson. It could be any lesson at all. After the lesson's been presented, or after you have explained a lesson to the class, you ask someone, now, tell me, what was this lesson about? Let's first find out what the lesson was about. How'd the story start? And then you start telling the story. Okay, that's enough. Now you continue on, and you continue on. Or if it's a history lesson, what was the lesson about? What happened? What are some things that happened here? You don't have to necessarily have a history or science lesson in order. But if they were to have read something, whether we did it in class or whether they did it on ahead for an assignment, if you can't recite, if you can't narrate, that is, tell the story, simply tell someone about what you read about, you really don't know it. And you can't engage the thought process to think about what you read if you don't know what you read. So this is a step. And this is a point where, in a sense, we read the lesson, maybe we read a section, and we want to discuss it in class, talk about it in class. Well, first we need to know, do we know what we're talking about? What was the lesson about? It's a sense of laying on the table. Let's lay the cards out here. Let's put the food out. What are we working with today? What is the content? What happened here? The lesson had something to do with assembly line. Tell me, what was it about? Well, Eli Whitney invented interchangeable parts. And what are interchangeable parts? Well, interchangeable parts are ones, they're all the same kind, and you can put them any part in any machine. And what else? Well, then there was the assembly line, and they made these parts on the assembly line. So you get these facts out. Now we have the facts. Now, once we know what we have read, now we're ready to start thinking, oh, assembly line. Did that affect the way people lived at all? Well, what do you think? Yes. How did people work before that? Well, each person made his own. Where? In his home. Now, if he worked in a factory, how would that change your life? Oh, well, you'd work in a factory from sun up. How long did they work? Sun up to sundown. And you start discussing this, and you can think about these few facts that we have are really, as you think about it, you can discuss how it changed the people's lives. A factory life was quite different than a life at home. And then you can make a jump to today. What changes are happening today? Is there anything happening today? What about computers? Is that changing people's lives? Oh, well, people can go back and work at home again sometimes instead of working. Is that going to affect our cities? Why would people move out of cities? And so, if you narrate, get them to make sure, if you don't have the information, you can't discuss. That's a first step. A very, very, very effective thing to do with young children. Start with them at kindergarten. First grade, you read the story. Tell us what happened in this story. We can. And then discussion. It's very rare to have a discussion in class, let me tell you that. It doesn't happen very often. We haven't had any here in the sessions that we give, really. We've had some in the dining room, and that's fine. In a discussion, you really don't know which direction it's going to go. All you can do is keep it on focus. And you discuss, and people say things, and you could discuss something like the story that Steve told us this morning about the soldiers. That could launch into a discussion. Often when we use the term discussion, we really mean enumerating the facts that we read in the lesson. But sometimes you can have a discussion. Students can tell stories. You can tell stories. I'd like to just make a few comments on the last one here, the role play. Similar to writing where you do the role play, you have someone prepare for a role play, or you can call someone right off the spot. And, for example, ask and answer questions for someone. The person can introduce himself. So, for example, we might ask Lonnie. Now, you imagine, class, I want to introduce you here to Thomas. This man is known to some of us as Doubting Thomas. He was one of Jesus' disciples, and now I might have you introduce yourself. But in this case, to save time, I'll introduce you. He was one of Jesus' disciples, and when he came and met Jesus after his resurrection, he's told the other disciples, what did you tell them?
I won't believe unless I see it.
Well, that's what he told. Now, you never had a chance to talk to Thomas before, but here he is. I'd like you to ask him something. He has actually, did you see?
At what point on?
After he saw.
Yes, I saw.
And do you believe?
Yes.
All right, now, what would you like to ask him after having had this experience? Ask him a question. Come on.
What? I saw the nail holes.
Did you actually touch him?
Yes. I touched his side.
Any other questions? Why is it so hard to believe?
The story seems so far out. I couldn't believe until I saw.
Do you think you ever would have believed if he hadn't allowed you to touch?
Probably not.
Okay. Well, now you can go on. Now, the fascinating thing about that kind of thing, you're really doing the same thing that you do if you just ask the students questions. Do you think Thomas would have believed? Well, they can sit here and say, well, I think he would or I think he wouldn't. All you're doing is giving a bit of a different twist to it, and you're forcing that person to try to think, to look at it the way Thomas looked at it. And when he answers the questions, the rest of the group can also evaluate his answers. And after you're finished with a little interview, you can ask the group, now, do you agree with him? And some person over here will say, No, I don't. Because I think Thomas really would have believed eventually. And then you can talk about that. Now, that can be done with any historical character, any science character. You can interview Albert Einstein, whatever. And any historical, and any storybook character. So, role-playing. And you can have several people come and, I mean, you might read a story in which you're disgusted with the characters. Well, maybe the hare and the tortoise. All right, here's the hare, here's the tortoise. Let's ask them some questions. Well, what would you ask the hare if you could? Have you learned your lesson? What do you think he'd say? How many of you think the hare learned the lesson? Well, we don't know. I mean, there's no way of proving that, but you can talk about it at least. Does a rabbit learn a lesson? I tend to say not. But anyway. And then what you can do is tell the class, tomorrow you two people are going to speak for these two characters. The rest of the people of you must have three good questions ready. Good questions. And you can grade the people on the questions they ask. I mean, just give them a participation grade, and you must ask good questions. Now, you, as a teacher, will need to ask a few questions maybe to get them going. But really, you're doing the same thing that you would do if you think about these and Bible characters, like we just did here. All right, and a further step you could try would be to bring these people in and tell them to talk to each other. Tell them to talk to each other. Have a conversation between two people who weren't even contemporary. What do you think Julius Caesar would have to say to Adolf Hitler? All right, let's have a conversation at the end of their lives. What do you think Apostle Paul would say to Billy Graham or whatever? All right, use your imagination. Those are some things to do with speaking. And of course, there's your typical question and answer. This is not exhaustive in any way. This is just intended to be a few ideas for you. You could also have the students write these things, but it doesn't take the time. And the difference between the speaking is that you have to think on your feet, and you will be a little more tentative in what you say, and that's all right. You're not going to put that in writing. You're going to say it, and it's a way of thinking aloud. Now, a few comments on the Bible writing activities. I gave you a paper yesterday with Bible writing activities. It's on the back of the language arts. I'd like to call attention to a few of those. At the top, suggestion number one is to have the students paraphrase, put in your own words, parables, proverbs, teachings, or prayers. Now, I want you to try one right now. And it's this. It's Psalm 37:4. I think you know it well enough. I'll just recite it here. I want you to put this in your own words. And it says this: delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thy heart. I'll say it once again. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thy heart. Rewrite that in your own words. What's it saying in your own words? That is a tough one because it seems to fly in the face of some other scriptures. Where the heart is deceitful above all things. But all right, I'm pushing here a bit for time, but who has something ready?
When God is the focus of my existence, He will satisfy my deepest and inmost longings.
Great. Who else? Do you have one?
Find your ultimate fulfillment in God, and He will satisfy your soul.
Great. Do you have one?
I think, let your heart beat with God's heartbeat, and you will come to, I didn't quite finish the end of it, but you will
be satisfied
with things that God.
That's for you. Very good. And I trust you will all wrestle with that when it come out well. Now, you'll find out nobody will have the exact same words, probably, and that's fine. There are many ways of saying this. But you can't paraphrase something if you don't understand it. A person who simply puts in synonyms and says something like be pleased in God and He will give you what you want, you wonder if that person really wrestled with it. Paraphrase. And retell stories. What that forces you to do is to actually look at the story. The problem with the Bible stories is that they're so familiar that we go down the same cow path. Who's ever walked down a cow path to a pastor? And you go down the same path every time. Every time you hear the story, you think exactly the same things. Every time. Unless somebody else calls your attention to something different. Daniel the lion's den. Well, all right. You have your set thoughts that you think, even when you read it in the Bible. And so you force the person to look at this in a different way. Rate the story of Daniel in the lion's den from the point of view of the fiery furnace. That's a bit mixed there. Daniel, however, was not there at the fiery furnace, but he was somewhere. Daniel probably knew about that. And so Daniel telling about his friend's experience, or from the king's point of view. How do you think the king would have told the story? And you can assign different people in the class to do it from different perspectives. Maybe only a couple you can choose four and say, we're going to have two do from each perspective. Who wants to do it from the point of view of the spouse of one who threw him in? What happened to the people who threw the friends in? This isn't Daniel, but Daniel's three friends. What happened to them? They were killed, right? So the point of view of one of those spouses whose husband was killed throwing the friends of Daniel in the fire. Tell the story from their perspective. It can be done with any Bible story, and you need to know the story. So they're going to have to go to the Bible and read the story and know the story, but you're going to look at that from a different perspective, and you'll know that story in a way that you didn't know it before. It can be done with historical events, with other stories too in books. And then definitions of terms. Take the word pray. I'd like you to quickly write a one-sentence definition of prayer. A one-sentence definition of prayer. No, not a book. I know there are books on prayer. One sentence. Don't try to say it all. Just give a good definition. Or even a phrase. All right. What did you come up
with? Talking and listening to God.
Good. Here's some others. You have one?
Mine is the same as what he said, talking with God.
Good.
Communicating and fellowshipping with God.
Good.
Prayer is communication with God.
Prayer is talking to God.
All right. Good. Now, you can do some of these things before and after, too. Maybe you're going to study one of these concepts and just ask the people to write what you have to say and read them all. Fine. And then after the devotional period or after you've talked about it, do it again and see if there's any different perspective there. Number four is similar to what I just showed you with the speaking there. Ask questions to ask a Bible character. You could write them. Say, imagine you're going to have the opportunity to ask King Saul four questions. And in fact, you could give different times in his life. Just while he's hiding among the stuff, You remember the part where he was, you know, that intrigues me, the story of Saul, when they anointed him king and it was going to be public. He went and hid, that well that they couldn't find him. They had to go and ask God where he was. Do you know that? They had to ask the oracle or the priest somehow. God told them where he was. Very fascinating. Suppose you have a chance to ask Saul something while he's hiding. What would you ask him? All right. And then another point in Paul's life, or Saul's life, just before Samuel shows up after he's offered the sacrifice, what would you ask him? And then after Saul has talked, or after Samuel has talked to him and said, God is going to choose someone whose heart is ever, what would you ask Saul? Or what would you tell Saul? Whatever. These are real people. These are real people. And what would you ask him? And then, of course, you can follow up. What do you think Saul might say to your question? Do you know Saul well enough to suggest what he might say in answer to that question? Why are you hiding? May I hide with you? All right. Translating songs, psalms, and proverbs into meter and rhyme. If you want to try some poetry there, take a song from the Bible. Mary's song, the Magnificat, or Moses' song, Miriam's song. Take some of those and put them into meter and rhyme. Original psalms and proverbs. Write your own little proverbs, your own little saying. We talked about sayings here, putting them up. Another challenge is to encourage the students to write pithy statements that they think are worthwhile sayings and come up with a classroom collection or have a poster on the wall of our sayings. You know, we talk too much. Whatever. And choose some Bible events to write original poems to interpret or to celebrate. The man at the pool of Bethesda. And then with Bible characters, story of his life, a dialogue involving two characters. A story involving the character in a contemporary setting. There are Sauls walking around today in this world. He's kind of a typical character. Journal entries of a Bible character, interview. And what about a typical day in the life of Paul while he's on his missionary journeys? Or here's the one. Write a typical day's work for the life of Paul in 2001. Suppose Apostle Paul were living today in today's world and were assigned to be the missionary to the Gentiles. Would he have someone book his flights for him? Would he use the internet? What do you think he would do? If he lived within the setting of the time he had, he did use ships. He went on ships. And he didn't have his private ship, but just how would it work today? Let me ask you one last one here. Suppose you're studying the Sermon on the Mount. Let me throw this open now. Thinking of the list I gave you before, what could you have your students write in relation to the Sermon on the Mount? List, whatever. Not necessarily a big assignment, could be a big assignment, but what about something that could be done in just a minute or two, like we did here with some definitions? What could they write? Mm-hmm. Yes, blessed are the meek. We don't know what's being blessed unless we know what a meek person is. Describe a meek person. How would you identify one if you could spend a day with a meek person? How would he act? You could just list some people. They're overwhelmed with stories, but make a list of things or phrases, things a meek person would do if you spend a day with them. What else? And that could be done for all the other qualities. Mm-hmm. Exactly. One of the best ways, the compare-contrast, one of the best ways to understand something is to also, at the same time, look at its opposite. What's the opposite of meek? And let's write our parallel beatitude. Blessed are the meek, cursed are the, for they shall, what do these people do? What else? See, passages like this are a challenge for us because they're so common and so basic that we tend to look at them, well, we know them. What else is there to? What else could you have them write in relation to a study of the Sermon on the Mount? Okay. You paraphrase the Beatitudes. Why was this such a new doctrine? They were amazed at this teaching. Find out how many three-syllable words are in the Sermon on the Mount. How many words of more than two syllables do you think are in there? Well, let's move on. I'd like to look at, I have one other handout here on activities in writing for art and music. I'll give them one to him. Do you want to pass them out to people on this side? Art and music. I think we'll take the... We'll do them in order. We'll do the art first. Now, I'm not suggesting that this is anything you do in art class. This is not a talk and teaching art class. This is simply looking at how could you have students do some writing activities in art class. Well, one thing to remember is that with art, it isn't just in art class. Textbooks have many illustrations, many pictures, and some history textbooks make and literature textbooks make it a big point to have some fine art reproduced in their textbooks. Art or period art. And so you can do some of these things with illustrations that are in the book itself. And so one of the things is to write about an art print. Now I have a photocopy of one here. I'd like you to get ready to write some things. And this is going to show you the outline, but since it's only black and white, it's not going to have any of the color element at all. But I'd like you to look at that and let me read some questions here first, and you can take your pick and get however much writing you get done in the couple of minutes I give you, but look at the choices first. One of the things you can pick to write is what action do you see on that picture? What is going on? What's happening? Don't start writing yet. Another one is to write the mood that has, or the feeling. If you sit there watching that, it's one of the bridges at New York going over the East River, I believe. It might be to Brooklyn, I'm not sure, but anyway, it connects Manhattan with the mainland. And what sounds could you hear if you were sitting there in reality? What perspective does it give you on the city or on the life there? Write a caption to put under the picture. A caption. If you're going to put it on the wall, what caption? Write a poem that it makes you think of or that's associated. Point out how it's framed or how it's designed. If you're going to clip it down to fit in a book, how would you clip it? Describe that. And... All right, go ahead. Choose one of those and... Right, whether it's a list, words, phrases, sentences, or anything else that you think of as you look at that picture. Anything it makes you wonder about.
All right. Now, you could also talk about this instead of writing. I'll give you some time to write. That's to save time here. We'll do some combination of reading what you wrote and talking about it. First, let's start out with what actions. Who wrote down some actions that are happening, either past action, something that had to happen in order for that picture to exist, or something that's happening now? Anybody?
The bridge was built.
The bridge was built, yes. Quite a project. Somebody had to conceive that thing and build it and design it. What else?
Steam engines.
Mm-hmm. Steamboats. What else?
People moving.
Yes. There are people there. Are the boats all going in the same direction? No. What else? Any other action? All right. Somebody say something about feelings or mood or that's you have as you, if you were actually there alive at that location.
Busy.
It's a busy picture. What else? Excuse me. Okay, show us a poem. Let's read it so everybody can hear it.
The ships sail calmly on the sea while cars and trucks go zooming by. Here I sit, just little me, yet God sees me. I wonder why.
Very good. Very good. Anybody else do something with mood or feeling associated with that?
Oh, magnificence, excitement, beauty, grandeur, leisure, vacation, bustle.
Good. You could simply ask them to make a list of words that it makes you think of. Right. All right. Who has a caption? We're going to hang this. It's supposed to have it in color. It's a poster. We're going to put it on the wall. We want a nice caption for it. Who has a caption? Anybody? The poem would make a good one that she just read. We have a poem. Now, let's talk a bit about the design there. What balance do you notice in the way this picture is presented? What's balanced about it? Yes.
The highest part of the bridge is on the left side, most of the boats on the
right. All right. Massive, high, full on the left. On the right, we have a smaller, more distant, and more sky on the right to balance the massive fullness on the left. Any other comments on balance or design?
I like the way there's not a lot of clutter in the middle of the picture. It's kind of, you know, it could have made the towers the center or made the steamboat the center. Mm-hmm. But it kind of left the center just a little bit ambiguous, and so you kind of look wider and get broader perspective on the whole thing.
Yes, many pictures have one central focal point. This doesn't really does it. It doesn't have one thing it definitely calls your eye to, although perhaps you could say the tower on the left, but there's something to attract you away from that, though. Any other comments about the framing? All the boats practically are framed inside the bridge, aren't they? Either under the bridge or between the pillars. There's a kind of a frame within a frame there. And there's also the perspective in which, obviously, the more distant things are smaller. They do always appear smaller. But the further away you get, the more there is to see. And that's almost appropriate because you can't see that many things that are close to you. Things that are far away are smaller. Let's do one other here. These kinds of things you can pick up at garage sales. Try to make a collection of, if you can, of some of these kinds of prints. If I can get this thing to stand there. And I'd like you to write about that picture. Whatever. Now I'm going to be a little more open. You can be more specific. You can do a number of things. Think of feeling, mood, maybe some detail that you see on that picture. Actually, yeah, go ahead. Write some things. Things that makes you think of, details that you notice. Okay, I'll find a different position here for it. That wasn't part of the activity. So don't write about the Great Fall. We'll try this one. You could assign this for the next day from some pictures in your book. All right. Let's hear what you have to say.
Beautiful foliage and a gentle stream.
It looks like a crisp fall day, and it doesn't look like anybody has been around for a while, at least messing with the scenery.
Good. Bonnie? Comments?
I just wrote images of a time that has passed reflect themselves in the idyllic stream.
Good. Any comments?
I looked at it before. There are some people up there, but doesn't really show what they're doing.
Comments?
The exuberance of an autumn, weather and activities, the peacefulness of a gently flowing stream.
Good. Anybody here? Comments? Stephanie?
A cool, relaxed, lazy day, gentle breeze, feeling of sunshine on your back.
Good. Now, a couple things to just talk about there. Where is the sun? What side of the picture? If you had to put the sun up above that picture somewhere, where would you put it? Straight up, right, left, middle? Speak up. To the right, yes. There's a shadow of the water wheel there. There is a path through that picture. If you follow the path, where would it take you? Yes, you could think of this, the left side, and not everybody will say the same. To me, the path goes through and into the distance into the sky. One thing to point out to students with artwork is that most works of art have a focus, well, most, many of them, the traditional works, have a focus two-thirds and two-thirds. It's either here, 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 or here. Very rarely in the middle. A good one is not in the middle. And this one is here. There's a balance here over this. And there's something that draws your eyes to this point. And right here, there is a miller talking to the farmer, and there's some mules. And if there's any focal point, it's right there. That's where the action is. And there are many things to see and talk about. Take those opportunities. You don't have to talk each one to death. Don't analyze that. Some are to be appreciated. Remember the quote that I had up the first day by Southey? Something about having to understand everything you, having to, yes, make sense out of everything you read. Some things are to be enjoyed. And when you eat a meal, it does you more good probably if you do not think about the operation of your stomach digesting it than if you do. So you just let it go ahead, you enjoy the eating, and let your body do the rest. And that's the way it is with a lot of artwork, a lot of stories. Enjoy the reading, enjoy the looking, and let it do its own work in you. You don't have to keep tabs on what's part of your digestive system it's in, and you don't have to talk about every aspect of every wonderful thing that you look at. That's a good way to kill interest, in fact. Moving on then on the list with art, again, character sketches. Oh, a wonderful... are you familiar with the... I looked for a copy of it around here and couldn't find it. American Gothic, I think it's called. It shows the husband and wife standing there, and the husband has a pitchfork, three-pronged pitchfork, holding it held up in front of his face. Who's familiar with that picture? Wonderful illustration to use. Put that on the wall. Use calendar pictures for some of these. Put that up and have your students do various things with them. A character sketch, a conversation between them. Ask him some questions. Interview him and ask him questions. Put little balloons beside them and have the person saying something and then this one saying something. And an enigmatic character like that, and different people will have them saying different things, and then you can discuss whether you agree on what they're saying. Talk about the difference between a work of art like that and a photograph. The ideals type, where the ideals books or ideals magazines take photographs, cut photographs out of magazines, and then have the students make a spread like you would in the scrapbook and ideals book, where they write something over here to go with the picture over there, or maybe find something to go with it, some associating writing with the picture. Let's move on to music, the last one. And I'll say, first of all, that singing is something that we don't do unless the thing that we sing about is significant. We sing about things that matter to us. That, in fact, is why it's appropriate, entirely appropriate, to use music for anything having to do with the Christian life, God and Jesus and what He's done. There's nothing bigger that we can sing about than that. But one of our problems is that in our school sometimes is the only thing we sing about. And with younger children especially, there are so many things in this world that they live among and are immersed in that they ought to be noticing. And if something is significant, if it's worthwhile looking at and enjoying, it's worthwhile singing about. So I challenge you to, and this is a little bit of a rabbit trail in one sense, I challenge you to find songs to sing that celebrate butterflies and roses and family reunions, activities. But to stay to our topic here, then I challenge you to have your students write little refrains or choruses or a little song that, I'm looking at number four, a song that somehow celebrates birds. Maybe if you're studying birds in class, try to write a four-line song about the blackbird and about the bluebird and about the cardinal. When Adam had the animals brought to him, he named each one, and his name was significant. Somehow he identified the character, the quality of what that made that animal the animal it was, and he gave it an appropriate name. And so one thing you could try as you study some things are to write just a short one, use a common tune, and write a little song about that, celebrating the whippoorwill, and to help you, you can find, there are books that have nature songs like that. And other songs, theme songs about your family, about friendship, lunchtime at school. Make up a little cheerful little song about lunchtime, and they'll end up singing it on the way to get their lunch boxes. Or at dismissal time. Teachers often have their children sing if they line up to go home, sing a little goodbye song. Well, you can make your own little song. In fact, one of our teachers had one she modified. It went something like this: our sunlight day is over and we are going home. It's the name of our school. You can plug your own in there. Or songs having to do with memories. Backing up to number three, with rote facts, there are some of these have actually been published or put on recordings where you take math facts and you put them to a common tune and they sing through them. And when you sing something, it's much easier to remember. In fact, there's a fascinating passage there at the end of, I guess it's Deuteronomy, where God had Moses give the children of Israel a song. A fascinating song, runs the whole chapter. I think it's Deuteronomy 32 in there somewhere. And
and it was to help them remember. So if you want somebody to remember something, you can put it in a song, and if something is significant. And one of the reasons that people, if I ask you to sing a song that I've written about the microphone cord, you wouldn't be very interested in singing it. Unless it's a humorous little thing, and then it might stick in your mind because of the great gap between the value, what we sing about, and here we're singing about a cord, and so that itself might stick in your mind. But if I ask you to sing about a microphone cord, you go, I don't care that much about a microphone cord. Why should I lift my voice and put myself into singing about the cord of a microphone? Now, this is a bit of an aside too, but that is one of our problems if our children do not sing, in that we are asking them to sing about something that they have not seen or experienced, and that's the challenge that is before us. But number seven, I'd like you to try quickly. Paraphrase a hymn. I'd like you to take the first stanza of Just As I Am. I want you to rewrite it in your own words. Don't try to make it rhyme. Break out of the poetry. Just as I am, without one plea, say that thy blood was shed for me. And since thou bidst me come to thee, O Lamb of God, I come. Just simply write that in your own words. At least get the first two lines done. That's really what I'm after, the first two lines. Just as I am, without one plea, say that thy blood was shed for me. Write that in your own words.
Come as you are, it said. Well, here I am, just me, one speck. Yet you died for me.
Good. Who else? Any of you have one ready? Florence?
The shedding of your blood was so awesome that I am speechless.
Good. Do you have one?
Lord, please recognize Jesus' blood shed for me. It's the only claim I can make.
Thank you. What about one of you two? Do you have one?
Wait, Tanya. Take me as I am. I have nothing to give but me. Only your blood makes me worth anything to you.
Good. Let's have one or two over here on the other side. Do you have one ready?
The way I am, without asking any favor, except Christ gave his life for me.
Good. And
it's, Lord, here I am. The only need in my life is the salvation you've given. Thank you for being here.
Good. I'm not sure how old I was until I sang that song for decades. The word plea just says I'm without one plea, and I always thought of it as without one request. Without one request, say that the blood was shed for me. I never made the connect or looked at the theological significance or the legal terminology that's in there. And that often happens in hymns, especially powerful hymns that have figures of speech in them. And that's saying that I have no plea, that is, when I come before the bar of God, I have no grounds to stand on, nothing except the blood of Christ. I plead. I don't plead innocence. I don't plead works. I don't plead anything else. I only plea the blood of Christ. And yes, try that with hymns. And I remember my sons, sometimes they'd say something, they'd say, well, I never knew that. I said, well, if you'd asked me, I'd have told you. But they don't know what they don't know. And you don't know what they don't know either. And you all know the experience of growing up, and you have these little lines. You hear people praying and saying, we never knew what lack or want was. Well, I never did either. You know, I never heard of such a thing as lack or want. Well, it was two separate words, you see. And lack or want. And you don't know how the people are singing these songs and mixing up the phrases that are pure nonsense. And so, yes, paraphrasing hymns, a good thing to try. And then, of course, there are little songs you can make up for activities. One of the things that we have really lost in our culture is work songs to sing while you work. That really apply to the work and celebrating the work. One time we did a bit of it. I took a group of boys on the Black Forest Trail over here. We were hiking. And as we went, we ad-libbed a little kind of a chanty song to sing while we hiked the Black Forest Trail. And it was fun. We got into it. We just took a tune that we knew. And it gave us an identity. Here we were, about 12 of us together, walking down this trail. And it was us in this setting, in this location. And we made up this little song. I never wrote it down, so I forget what it was. But write a little song celebrating or associated with some work. If you have a sub sale at your school, why make up a song that you could sing while you put together the subs, putting the meat on the, and use your imagination that way a bit. So, write. Let your pen be the pen of a ready writer. And as you think of writing, let me say in closing here that by all means, don't go back home and say, I'm not going to do anything I did last year. This year, I'm going to read to my children every day. I'm going to have them write every day. You'll get 2 days into the year, and you will be so disoriented, and you'll pull out your hair, and you'll go back and do things as you did them before, and you forget everything that you heard here. No. If you can do one thing, that's more than nothing. And if you can read sometimes, have them write sometimes. You don't change overnight. You don't want to change overnight. You want to make a little gradual change. And remember to be who you are. In closing, it's Matt, right? Peter Schramm. He read a poem to me last night. I'd like him to read. And I'll make some comments about why I had him read that. Why don't you come up here? Just briefly, yes.
Okay. I wrote this poem when I was a chief, and one morning I woke up and there was a pack of coyotes that were just making the woods ring on the next ridge, and so I wrote this. It's entitled Song in the Night. The night was silent, moonlit, and still. Murky shrouds of mist wreathed every hill. The trees, half seen, like wraiths, stood there, silent, waiting, aware. Then, out of the silence, I know not from where, came a sound that floated and trembled, quickening the air. A mournful, lonely, haunting wail that spoke of lofty peaks, frosty nights, and shadowy forms on a darkened trail. 'Twas a sound that mankind hath dreaded and feared, a sound that pierced like a heart freshly speared. This cry that all have dreaded so long came quavering and shimmering, a killer's song. Across the dark land came the spellbinding wail, a hair-curling promise the wolves wouldn't fail. I stood there mute in the fading moonlight, and the silence returned to that mist-shrouded night. But the night would never feel quite the same way, for somewhere silent, fanged forms now stalk their prey.
Thank you.
Yes.
Now, I had him read that simply to illustrate this, that every single one of you has something either out of your experience, or you have a strength. You might not be aware you have it.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.